This weekend starts right after this.
Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Politically defining the new normal. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
President Trump and Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden are on the campaign trail talking about a return to an old normal. Hear how each plans to arrive there.
With the nation in a time of great rage, you may need some anger management tools. We'll have advice.
On the personal finance front, how to grow wealthy by knowing when to resist the influence of mob thinking.
And another trend inspired by the pandemic, New York City residents buying cars.
The majority of households in New York City own no car. And I think in Manhattan, it's only 22% of households in Manhattan own a car. And that's compared nationwide, only 8% of households have no car. So in New York City, things are really different. And the reason is it's just awful to own a car in New York.
Ann Cadet at the Wall Street Journal on city residents buying cars to get away from lockdown restrictions. In the age of coronavirus, there is a lot of talk of a new normal emerging. Yet in the presidential campaign of 2020, both President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden actually are promising a return to an old normal, albeit in dramatically different ways. Here to explain is Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal. Jerry, each trying to define normal on their terms?
I think so, yeah. And I think to some extent there's a recognition that people are worn out with all the summers of the years of controversies, really, that we've had. Now, maybe they want to return to normal, but what normal means for Joe Biden and what normal means for Donald Trump looks very different at this point. I mean, if you take the Biden case, I think the Biden campaign and Joe Biden himself are calculating that people are just sort of worn out by, you know, 4 years of sort of constant controversy under Donald Trump, government institutions under attack, and they're saying, look, in the Biden world, government institutions will be respected, things will work the way they're supposed to, there will be actual compromises between Democrats and Republicans, we'll respect traditional alliances, and oh, by the way, we will make big changes in response to the George Floyd moment, but we will do them within the democratic system the same way we did after the Civil War and the same way we did during the Civil Rights Movement in the 1960s. That's the normal that I can take this country back to. And I think you saw President Trump, by contrast, over the 4th of July weekend in a couple of pretty tough speeches, one at Mount Rushmore and one at the White House on the 4th of July, basically say something different about what normal is. He's saying basically normal is when people aren't tearing down Confederate statues and statues of Ulysses S. Grant in the streets, when nobody's taking over blocks of downtown Seattle, when basic American heritage sees America's founding fathers not as villains but as visionaries. That's the normal that I think we ought to have. That's the normal I want to take the country to. And that's kind of the cultural message that Donald Trump delivered in 2016, and now, in a way, he's ramping it up for 2020.
All right, so you touched on it a little bit, but I was going to say, it seems that for some folks, normal would equal complacency, which was part of why Mr. Trump got elected in 2016.
Well, I think that's probably changed since 2016, though, because I think he's sharpened the questions in many ways, which is kind of what Donald Trump does. I think that what Joe Biden is trying to say to people, sometimes explicitly, sometimes implicitly, is that this country can work well and normal and without all the drama if we respect institutions and respect the guardrails on democracy, which is a phrase that he actually has used, and that's the normal people want, and they've had enough of the kind of hyper-drama of the Trump years. And I think the Trump message has always been, the country's off on the wrong track, and it's because of a whole combination of economic and cultural forces that we've let get out of control, and we got to go back. And a lot of people think it's, well, let's go back to the 1950s. I don't know if that's fair or not, but there's a kind of a return to a day an America of yore that he's talking about that appeals to a lot of his core voters.
Speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. And he's written a piece entitled Trump and Biden Offer Dramatically Different Versions of Normal in America. How about normal economically speaking?
Well, that normal economically speaking depends on what you think normal is in the age of coronavirus, right? Because the virus is really not shut down, but has really squished the American economy. So what does that mean? I think the Trump message on normal is, hey, we just got to move past the virus. Stop being obsessed by it. Don't let it paralyze us and start reopening the country, and we'll deal with the health effects as we need to. And I think the Biden message is we can't have a normal economy without a much more robust government plan to deal with the virus. We can't have a safe reopening of the economy until we have a safe environment in which the coronavirus is under much better control than it is now. So I'm going to offer you things like a much more robust government testing program, a bigger use of the Defense Production Act to produce the medical supplies that health professionals still need. Things like what one Biden advisor mentioned to me, like maybe we need something like blue stickers that businesses can put in their windows, much as businesses did during the New Deal to show they were supporting the New Deal programs. These stickers would say, I'm abiding by government safety standards, so it's okay and safe for you, Mr. Consumer or Mrs. Consumer, to come into my shop. Things like that. So I think the Biden message is the economy can't be normal until the virus is under much more control than it is now. I'm going to do more to make that happen.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. 12 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
For streaming, creating, gaming, and more, power your passions for less during Dell's Exceptional Cyber Savings event. Enjoy up to $400 off stunning laptops like the XPS, along with high-performance desktops and next-level Alienware systems, redefining what's possible with 10th-gen Intel Core processors. Shop special prices on top-brand electronics and accessories, plus enjoy free shipping on everything. Don't forget to ask for Intel when you call 800-BUY-DELL. That's 800-BUY-DELL.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for joining us. What are you doing with unspent summer vacation money? Boats haven't quite achieved sold-out pandemic panic buy status, like toilet paper, bicycles, but they're in increasingly short supply. Courtney Rubin, contributor at the New York Times, says with families looking for a way to vacation as close to a bubble as possible, they're plowing money they might have spent on trips and summer camps into all manner of boats. Courtney, what are we seeing?
I think you're seeing people saying, what are we going to do with ourselves? We can't go on vacation. Our kids can't go to camp. Like, how do we entertain them in a way that is fun and also socially distant? And so, you know, they're plowing money that they might have put into Disney World or wherever and buying these boats.
Boy, and they're not just buying an aluminum bass boat with some electric motor and a towing contraption. I mean, some of these folks are buying big time boats.
Yeah, there's definitely been some yacht sales, which I've been told is really pretty unusual for first time buyers to buy yachts. But a lot of them are people who chartered yachts, and of course, you can't really charter a yacht anymore. So I guess you have to buy one.
Goodness. So what are some of the sales numbers?
Well, I talked to one company that told me that they were down to less than 5% of their normal inventory. This was a dealership. Yamaha told me that they sold 1,600 boats in May, which is something like, normally that's a third of what they would sell for the entire year.
Goodness.
Pretty much every boat dealership. I'm told that when you drive along in Lake of the Ozarks, some of the boat dealerships are actually, you can see in the window that they don't have any inventory.
No kidding. That's something. I guess that speaks to the point. There was one guy in your story who said along the lines of people are buying them like cars on a lot, like might not be exactly what they want, but they'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, basically, funnily enough, you know, the way that I got the idea for this story was a dermatologist that I talked to for a totally separate story happened to mention that he was having trouble buying a boat, and I sort of thought, quite facetiously, like, that's hard. And I, you know, and I started looking into it, and I was like, oh, you know what? He really wasn't kidding, because I thought, how hard could it possibly be to spend thousands and thousands of dollars?
Man. We're speaking with Courtney Rubin. She's a contributor to the New York Times. She's got a piece entitled "The Boat Business is Booming." What about the supply chain? You referenced that in your story, too. Is it now difficult with inventory running low?
One of the things that has happened that's kind of interesting is that people who ordered boats custom, I wasn't able to get into this in the story, but people who ordered custom boats, which they normally do in the winter, you know, the companies haven't been able to deliver those on time. So people who are supposed to get their boats like in April or May are now getting them in July. Even, you know, some of the owners of some of these boat dealerships, one of them told me that he had traded up and sold his boat over the winter, and now he's not getting his boat until just about this week when he was supposed to get it in May.
I didn't realize, too, I'm not a boat owner, that there's little to learn when driving a boat, I guess, depending on where you are. What was that angle of the story?
You know, it's actually one of these things where it literally has become like a video game. I mean, all of these boats have like called joystick docking, which is literally exactly what it sounds like. And so it's not actually, you know, I learned to water ski as a child in summer camp, and I remember you would spend all this time waiting for them to kind of dock the boat, and apparently that doesn't really happen anymore. You know, it's just, you can go online. Some of these people told me they went online and took a 6-hour class. Other people, you go out with someone. I think it's Marine Max puts you with a captain for 4 hours, and he teaches you everything that you need to know. Like, this is not like, you know, learning to parallel park.
And then what are some folks spending? These boats, like $50,000, couple million, that kind of range?
You know, there's a pretty vast difference. I think that you can get a boat for like $30,000. And then, of course, there's the $1.4 million range. And then there's boats, you know, that go way, way above that with, you know, all kinds of motors. And then, you know, the other thing that's big now in yachts, is, I'm told, never having, you know, I'm obviously not on a yacht, but the other thing that's big on yachts is that they have this kind of stabilizing technology. So, you know, there's nothing cool about a yacht if you're getting seasick on it. So people are, you know, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars where you add these, you know, gyro stabilizers to make it so you don't get seasick on your big yacht.
Thanks, Courtney. Courtney Rubin, contributor at the New York Times. 21 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. With a lot of us working from home right now, we're really reassessing the way we do things. Not that long ago, I was used to having to go to multiple sites to keep track of my finances. I didn't even think about it. But when I finally did, I realized there has to be a better way. And of course, Quicken, the most popular personal finance software on the market, figured it out. Quicken gives you everything you need to easily review all of your finances. It's on one comprehensive dashboard with the tools, templates, and calculators to make it easy. Whether you're tracking your spending or investing in the future, Quicken puts you in the driver's seat so you can make the most of the good times and take charge when things are hard. Try Quicken yourself, risk-free, and if you like it, save even more. Get the peace of mind and freedom that comes with taking better control of your finances today. Try Quicken risk-free for 30 days and get 25% off when you go to quicken.com/Gordon. That's 30 days risk-free and 25% off when you go to quicken.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Another trend inspired by the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic, fears of mass transit, or just the need for a getaway vehicle, is sending more city residents to car dealers. Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
In New York City, 55% of households own no car, but that's changing. Ann Cadet of the Wall Street Journal has written about this new car buying trend and joins us now. Ann, how has the pandemic changed things in New York City?
Yeah, it's interesting. As you just said, the majority of households in New York City own no car. And I think in Manhattan, only 22% of households in Manhattan own a car. And that's compared nationwide, only 8% of households have no car. So in New York City, things are really different. And the reason is it's just awful to own a car in New York. The insurance rates are high, and you can't park, and you have to pay for parking, and your car gets dinged up. And if you don't really need a car, a lot of people just skip the whole thing. But that's starting to change now because of the really obvious reasons. A lot of people don't feel safe taking public transportation. And also with the lockdown, A lot of people just felt really cooped up in their apartments and they want a getaway car.
Are they still biking and walking and just can't get to where they need to go?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. If you want to get out of town, if you don't have your own car, you have to take public transportation or get a rental car, which some people don't feel comfortable with. They don't want to do Zipcar. They don't want to do Uber. They don't want to do anything except their own little private car that's only for them.
And the people who are interested in buying cars, are they first-time car buyers, or do they have one and have gotten rid of it?
Yeah, that's, well, a lot of people move to New York from somewhere else. So if you grew up in New York City, there's a good chance you've never owned a car. You might not even have a driver's license. But most of the people who have moved here have owned a car in the past. And if you're, they're like me, I sold my car as soon as I got here, and I was like, this is not working. So they're not necessarily first-time car buyers, but this might be the first time in, you know, 5, 10, 20 years that they've gone out and bought a car.
We're speaking with Ann Cadet of the Wall Street Journal. Ann, how are they buying cars? We've heard a lot recently about buying online. Are they going out? Are they buying online? How's it working?
Yeah, I talked to some auto dealers. The ones who have done well are dealerships that are already set up to do completely online transactions, so someone could just buy a car online and then they'd have a salesperson deliver the car to their home. And I talked to one dealership in Queens who, he didn't really have a lot of business in March, but by April and May he was selling, you know, hundreds of cars online, and then I think maybe like about 700 in May, which is a lot of cars. And now that the dealerships are opening up again in New York City, walk-in traffic has really grown considerably. I talked to the folks at Cars.com who they track data nationwide, and they saw that in at the end of June, walk-in leads to car dealerships nationwide were up about 6% over June of 2019. But in New York City, they were up 36% over June of 2019. And considering the fact that a lot of people are still not, you know, so keen on going out and going into stores, that's a pretty big increase.
What kinds of vehicles are they buying?
Yeah, that's interesting, too. You know, New York doesn't really have a big car culture. We don't really care what we drive. We just kind of want to get from point A to point B. So a lot of the people who are buying cars are looking at things like the Honda Fit or the Honda Civic has been a big seller. People just want kind of basic sedans that they can rely on. They don't want something fancy. And then there's been a big increase in used cars as well. I talked to one recent car buyer who he just wanted kind of like a basic, you know, whatever to get him from point A to point B. And he said he went to a lot of the used car dealerships and there just wasn't a lot of inventory around. And he thought he could get some great deals, but there aren't good deals on used cars right now because everyone in New York City wants to buy a used car.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenko with Wall Street Journal reporter Ann Cadet. 30 minutes now after the hour on this weekend. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Hey, thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenko. Coming up this half hour, anger management for this angry society. Also, how to think independently about your money. Plus, why Americans are buying more boxed wine these days. And the fun of getting a delivery from the wine fairy. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. How are your anger management tools working in this time of rage? The strain is spilling over into our personal lives, fomenting hostility with friends, family, even strangers, and harming our own emotional well-being. How do we identify and then manage the emotions? We're joined now by Elizabeth Bernstein, columnist at The Wall Street Journal. Elizabeth, what have you found?
So I wanted to look at anger. I always write about emotions, but I wanted to look at anger because we're living in a time of great fury, as we know. I don't need to explain that to anybody. But we also know that anger can ruin things. It can ruin our relationships. It can ruin our health. It can make us not think correctly, not think strategically. So it's very harmful for us, too. Harmful for everybody. But anger has an upside, so anger can be good. So I thought now's a perfect time to look at anger and to try to help people, work through it. It's really uncomfortable to live with anger for too long, but, what do you do?
Yeah. We're speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein. She writes the Bonds column for the Wall Street Journal. The piece is called Anger Management for an Angry Time. All right, so how can it be good?
So anger, people don't often realize this. Anger is an adaptive thing. It's like an evolutionary thing that's going on. We become angry. It's to alert us to a threat. So it actually, boosts our fight or flight response. So anger is there to protect us. We're supposed to see the threat, get upset, and anger is motivating. It gives us energy, and we can do something about it. So that's where anger is good. And that's when you're running from a mastodon, right? But now it can help us focus. It can give us motivation to right or wrong. If there's something we're angry about, suddenly we have courage. We have energy, and we can go out there and do something about it. So that's where it's good. It's good in the world, and you see people trying to change injustices right now.
Yeah.
So it's very good in that way. But again, if you're too angry for too long, it has all sorts of horrible health, effects. It's going to hurt your heart. It's going to, make you at risk for stroke, cancer, inflammation. Goes down the, down the road, tons of things. But also, I really focused on in this article your thinking. It has very harmful effects on your thinking when you're really angry. So basically what happens in your brain is activity rises in the emotional parts of your brain, the parts that process emotions, and the activity in your brain just shuts down in the thinking parts. And so it's much harder when you're angry. This is research-based. There's a lot of research on this. It shows that when we're angry, we have a much harder time understanding someone else's perspective. We're much less empathetic. We don't share as much. We have all these harmful things. We basically don't think strategically. And that's not good.
Yeah. We're speaking with Elizabeth Bernstein. She writes the Bonds column for the Wall Street Journal. The piece is called Anger Management for an Angry Time. All right, so how about some management tips here?
So let's go to the management tips. So what do you do? The first thing you want to do really is calm yourself down. So, and all of these tips are research-based. So you calm yourself down if you just even breathe. You don't have to breathe deep. You just sort of pay attention to your breathing. This research shows that this is very good for your brain. It's going to calm down that part of your brain that's overreacting, the amygdala, which is sort of where fear and anxiety, reside in your brain. So you want to breathe, maybe take a walk, exercise, do something that's going to calm down your physical response, because that's what you want, your nervous system, your brain to calm down so you can think more clearly.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bernstein, she writes the Bonds column at the Wall Street Journal. Let's talk about some numbers other than the stock market. Just how much could you save, for example, in 1 year by switching to Harry's? You have your choice. You could buy 26 cups of coffee in New York City, or 3 deep dish pizza dinners in Chicago, or, keeping it closer to home, 6 months of Netflix. At $2 a blade, Harry's can save you hundreds over time, but they don't skimp on quality. With Harry's, I get a smooth, close shave, and the precision trimmer blade makes it easy to get the tough spots around my goatee. Get your own Harry's trial set by going to harrys.com/Gordon, and if you love it, blade refills are delivered directly to your door on your schedule, with or without a subscription. It's super convenient. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving and saving today. Nick, glad you're with us. On the investing front, what leads people to feed on each other's exuberance or despair, thus pushing market prices to such extremes? We don't know for sure, but economists and psychologists have identified various mental mistakes that can cause the investing crowd to become convinced they know what the financial future holds, prompting them to buy or sell en masse. Jonathan Clements at HumbleDollar.com has a look at four concepts that could be helpful. Jonathan, set this up.
So we all like to think that we're fiercely independent thinkers. You know, we hear information, we form our own opinions, and yet that simply isn't the case. We're hugely influenced by those people around us, our friends, our colleagues, family members, and often we'll adopt their views as our own. And much of the time, that isn't such a bad thing. You know, for instance, if you want a recommendation for a good place to go on vacation, asking friends is a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Ditto for restaurant reservations, ditto for book recommendations. The problem when it comes to listening to other people is that it can lead us to make bad financial mistakes.
All right, so you looked at these kind of four concepts here with regards to this. Explain a couple.
So when it comes to investing, one of the key concepts that we need to keep in mind is this notion of narrative. So we generally, when the market moves, as it did earlier this year, there's a good reason for it. There's a reason the market dropped sharply beginning February 19th. But what happens is we tend to create narratives to explain what's going on. And if those narratives are sufficiently scary, people start to make panicky decisions. And if you cast your mind back to late February and early March, some of the narratives about the economic impact, about the number of people who would be infected, about the fatality rate were super scary, and the people who listened to those narratives were much more likely to sell at the worst possible time.
Hmm. All right, so how do you get around that, or how do you know that's the wrong decision?
Well, one of the things that you need to do is to be aware of these mental processes, this tendency to take recent market returns and extrapolate them into the future, to assume that when the markets are moving that other people know something that you don't. And so being aware of these notions and being able to step back and say to yourself, maybe what I'm seeing here isn't everything. Maybe there's more to this story. And often the smart thing to do at that point is to talk to somebody who you think is wise when it comes to the financial market. Talk to them about what's going on and what your fears are, and with any luck, they'll talk you off the ledge. And this, of course, is the reason why a lot of people end up with financial advisors. A good financial advisor, with emphasis on the word good,
yeah,
will act as a financial coach and help to talk you off the ledge when we get these wild market swings.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece entitled Keep Your Distance, and it's about independent financial thinking. So you touched on a little bit there. Talk about extrapolation.
So extrapolation is this tendency when the market is going up or down to take what's ever happening in the market and assume it's going to keep on going. I mean, we know, for instance, that, over the long haul, the stock market has returned, somewhat less than 10% a year, and yet when we start to get these big market moves, people throw that historical memory out and say, wow, the market is down 30%, it's going to fall another 30%, or the market is up 30%, it's going to do another 30% next year. We forget the history and we just start extrapolating those short-term returns, and that's when people start to make these big investment bets, and often those are the big bets that they regret.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com.
As you get back to business, small things can make a big difference, like marking safe distances with floor tape and posting reminders to wash hands. As always, Grainger is here to help, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, 24/7 support, safety recovery guides, and more. It's part of our commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
For streaming, creating, gaming, and more, power your passions for less during Dell's Exceptional Cyber Savings event. Enjoy up to $400 off stunning laptops like the XPS, along with high-performance desktops and next-level Alienware systems, redefining what's possible with 10th-gen Intel Core processors. Shop special prices on top-brand electronics and accessories, plus enjoy free shipping on everything. Don't forget to ask for Intel when you call 800-BUY-DELL. That's 800-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Demand for certain supermarket staples has surged in strange ways since COVID-19 began shutting down the economy in March, sometimes causing a panic over products that never were as popular as they are now, like toilet paper and disinfectant wipes. But none seems to have risen to the cultural occasion quite like boxed wine. Brent Schrotenboer, reporter at USA Today, says boxed wine sales jumped 36% for a 15-week period that ended in mid-June. Brent, explain the trend.
Well, if you think about it, it makes all the sense in the world. People are cooped up at home. Their incomes are strained, possibly because their hours are reduced or they lost their jobs. And what better to do than drink at home, and what better thing to buy than wine in bulk, which comes in a cardboard box and has been around for decades. It's usually been snobbed at, as the headline of the story kind of suggests, is that boxed wine or wine in a box has often been sort of derided as being cheap and not very good quality, but there actually are a lot of brands now that have entered that space that are packaging their wine in boxes because it's economical. If you think about it, you know, like the traditional wine bottle is like 750 milliliters. You can buy 3 to 5 liters in a cardboard box. It comes in a bag inside a box with a spigot. And it's funny because, you know, one brand has been around for a long time, Franzia. You've probably seen it just about everywhere, from Walgreens to Walmart. And, you know, that a box of that is 5 liters, which equals about 34 5-ounce glasses. And if you do the math, that comes out to about 50 cents a glass. Mm. And it's the number one wine brand in the world in terms of volume sales, not boxed wine, but all wine brand in the world. It did like 26 million cases just last year. For 23 straight years, it's been number one.
Wow.
Seller. It's often kind of like derided in the culture. American culture sort of derides boxed wine. Yes. It connotes, you know, sort of like a poor quality, but it's really not the case. If you do a blind test, I'm not sure that even the fanciest wine connoisseurs would be able to detect much of a difference with some of the brands. Yeah.
We're speaking with Brent Schrotenboer, reporter at USA Today. His piece is called Why Americans Are Buying More Boxed Wine During COVID-19. You know what? I didn't realize reading in your story that it lasts. Why is that?
Well, yeah, if you think about that too, it's like you're uncorking a bottle of wine in like a traditional 750-milliliter wine, like a lot of people recommend that if you don't want to drink it all at once, that you got to like use one of those suction.
Yeah. They don't work.
One of those suction toppers to like get the air out of it. And the way boxed wine works is it comes in a plastic bag inside the box with a spigot, and it's sort of like a natural vacuum. You know, there's not a lot of air in there, and there's not any light in there, and so that alone preserves it. There's not like extra air in there because it's coming out. Gravity kind of sucks out the liquid in the air as you press the button on the spigot. So it really makes almost too much sense. It's like it almost makes me wonder why we do it this way with these smaller bottles.
Yeah.
You know, it's like kind of wasteful.
It's true.
And you can just buy so much more bang for the buck.
Thanks, Brent. Brent Schrotenboer, reporter at USA Today. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. Mysterious groups of do-gooders known as wine fairies are spreading booze, treats, and good cheer across America. The Sisterhood of the Traveling Wine Group leaves bottles on the doorsteps of strangers, friends, and neighbors as a way to spread joy during the pandemic. It was founded 3 months ago. Fox News says hundreds of wine fairy Facebook groups have now appeared nationwide. The fairies collect the addresses of wine lovers in their communities and even ask which varieties of wine they'd prefer to receive. 40-year-old Kara Rindell from Raleigh, North Carolina, founded the Sisterhood of the Traveling Wine. When she's not a wine fairy, she's an escalation manager. The group now contains over 51,000 members and has an additional 3,000 on the waiting list. Ms. Rindell, by the way, is now creating alternative versions of this gift-giving group, including the Brotherhood of Booze and Beer. and a non-alcoholic version for kids. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.